Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders. They may own small businesses, large businesses. They may be authors, speakers, and honestly, anything across the business spectrum. And they're here to share their wonderful stories, and they're excited to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and best of all, actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today is one that I find fascinating. I really don't know a whole lot about real estate, but everybody knows about New York real estate. So our topic today is Negotiating New York, Life, Love, and the Pursuit of Real Estate with Joanne Douglas and Alfred Renna. Now, these are siblings and they're top real estate duo. So they bring readers along in this book, and we'll talk a bit about the book, along on an engaging and often hilarious journey into the world of New York real estate. So let me tell you a bit about my guest. Joanne Douglas is a market-savvy and top-producing agent, and she is often enlisted as a speaker and expert at top broker seminars and has guest lectured with Barbara Corcoran, star of Shark Tank. I've never seen that show, but I've heard of it, at New York University and Marymount College. And Barbara also wrote the foreword of her recently published book, the one I just mentioned, Negotiating New York, Life, Love, and the Pursuit of Real Estate. Alfred Renna, his is now the largest producing residential sales office in the country. Wow. Because he knows that even the largest real estate company is no bigger than each agent's individual performance. And he also boasts a successful management style that instills confidence and fosters every agent's unique business style. A native New Yorker, he deeply understands the city's real estate market and has a passion for the creative and strategic marketing possibilities inherent in web technologies, consumer, business-to-business applications. Guys, welcome. It is so good to have you here. I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you.
We were too, so we're happy to be here.
Well, yeah, yeah. Listen, before I get started, tell me if there's anything I left out of your bios, because it's important that people understand who you are and what you're bringing to the table this morning. So if there's anything I left out, feel free to fill it in right now.
All right.
Well, we live real estate 24 hours a day, both professionally and personally.
So I kind of gathered that.
Yeah. There isn't very much of a dividing line between our personal lives and our professional lives when it comes to real estate. And if we're not working on real estate for our company and helping people, you know, customers and buyers and sellers, then we're doing it for ourselves or with our friends.
And Joanne, didn't you tell me that you have another sibling in the business with you?
Yes. And in fact, Donna happens to be sitting in the conference room with us, and she's taping this session with you. So Donna
Hi,
is my
Donna.
Partner.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So that's three siblings in one office. It's pretty crazy, but it's fun and we love it. Donna and I head up our team, which is the Douglas team, and we have several other members, assistants, and brokers that work with us, and our driver who takes us all around town so we can get to our appointments on time and show buyers all those $50 million properties. Of course, not everything is that expensive in New York. We do have reasonably priced properties like a little studio for $500,000
See, my mouth just went dry. Thinking about that, it just makes me go blue.
I know, the numbers are crazy.
Denise, just to give you a little perspective of where we are physically, is we're in one of several conference rooms within the East Side sales office of Douglas Elliman. So this is the office that I'm involved with management. And for size-wise, we have over 600 agents associated with just this one office. And last year, we did $5 billion in sales volume.
Wow.
Most companies don't do that. So I'm not bragging, but just to give you perspective on the magnitude of what is involved in this one office, which is out of 9 offices here in New York City.
Oh, and I'll give you a visual. We are on Madison and 56th Street. Behind us is the tallest residential building in the Western Hemisphere. It's called 432 Park. It happened we had our book launch there on the 92nd floor. And to the other side of us is Trump Tower. And so we're often surrounded by Secret Service.
Machine guns are outside right now.
I agree. There are 240 snipers around.
Oh, my God.
So we are either in the safest place in the world or the single most dangerous place.
I was going to say there's probably a fine line between those two things.
Yeah, probably right.
That's pretty amazing. And listen, you guys are pretty young people. So I guess my biggest question to all three of you is, what in the world drove three of you in one family to such a passion? Because I can hear the passion. I'm looking at your book. I've read up on you, and it's like, wow, these people are pretty much unstoppable. But what started this? You know, what was the genesis for this? Because that's not something, I mean, it's, you will see the occasional one person do it. And, of course, in the Trump family, they're all pretty much involved. I think it's fairly unusual, at least in my view of the world, that three people from the same family just go to amazing heights in a very short time. So if y'all don't mind, I would love to hear that story. What compelled you to do this?
I think we were basically born to do it. I sometimes things might be in your genes, and then they're also, of course, influenced by your surroundings. Our parents moved a couple of times, and then they built their own summer home. And I think it was really there with our summer home, and they involved, or four of us, we actually have another sibling, another sister, who is in the process of renovating two apartments in Sicily in Italy. But we were involved with them in choosing where they were going to build the home, which was out in the Hamptons in a town called Sag Harbor. We were involved in how the home would look. Of course, we were quite young. And once we had it our first summer, we started building tree forts. And I think that's where our genes came from in terms of our desire for real estate. And then our mother was a very, very talented decorator. She only decorated our own homes, but she had she was so advanced in the things that she did. So we all have that desire for beautiful surroundings, and we're very much, we just love architecture and design. So everything that's related to real estate, we love.
Let me interject what Joanne mentioned about building tree forts. When we were kids, we would borrow wood from neighboring houses which were under construction. And
not give it back.
Yeah, we call that relocating in the South.
So we would relocate some scrap pieces of wood to build tree forts. And you can kind of think of that as we were early pioneers in development.
We were.
And then, you know, for me, my own personal story on this is that I was away at school, actually going in college in Rome. And while I was there, I found out that my parents sold our summer house. So I was probably about 19 years old, and I was devastated by that because we grew up with that house. And I think what happened was once that house got sold and I had no choice in the matter, that created a drive, and that drive was to get my own house back where we grew up as kids.
You know, we all were devastated, and ultimately, at this point in our life, we now all have a weekend or summer home in Southampton. So that was a huge driving force for, I think, all of us to have that. And so, and we've also bought investment properties, and we rent them out. It's just, you know, we love decorating them. And, you know, sometimes we're decorating on a dime. Other times we may up it a little bit. But, you know, there's so many ways that you can make your home beautiful without it costing the many millions of dollars our clients spend on their homes, just on the decorating. It's just extraordinary.
We do borrow design ideas.
We
don't relocate those.
And, you know, we have relationships.
I think we all do.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! We love.
That's
watching.
Why all those shows pop up, and I don't have cable TV. I really have zero interest in TV, but you know, Fixer Upper and all of these HGTV shows, those exist for a reason because we all want to have beautiful, serene surroundings. And you know, I don't know about you, but my house, for even still, when I was you know first a young married, my house was what I called you know early garage sale. An early mm-hmm. dollar dime. I mean, you know, picked up things from, some of the best pieces I have in my house. I picked up from curbs, refurbished, and put them in the house. Mm-hmm. But I think that drive is in most of us.
You know, Denise, when I was a kid, I used to watch This Old House, and I was fascinated by the construction process. And I think that combined with our father having been an engineer, has added to the desire of not only owning real estate, but really designing things and building. So I just finished building a house about a year ago, which was a 16-month process. I took a one-year hiatus, and now I'm constructing another building on the property. So I couldn't go too long without designing and building and torturing myself.
And so So now he's torturing me.
Have you ever been to the Hearst Castle in California?
No.
Oh, gosh, you've got to go. The Hearst Castle is just phenomenal. You know, the San Simeon, it's called, and it's beautiful. I think, you know, with your travels and your artistic sensibility, some of it might appall you. Some of it is just so over the top that you go, you can't take it all in. But it's on, you know, it's right there on the coastal highway. And then there's another story out of California, San Diego, is the Winchester House. This woman built and built and built and built and built forever until she passed away. She was told by a psychic, I believe, that if she kept building, she wouldn't die. And, of course, that she got taken. She was sold a bill of goods. Yeah, I've been to both of them multiple times. And if you ever get the chance, go see those because I think – you would find a lot to really go, oh, my gosh, and quite a bit to go, oh, ick. So it's an overload of the senses in many, many ways. But you know, if you get a chance, go.
We will. We were recently in San Francisco and Beverly Hills as part of our book tour, which we're actually in the midst of that now. But, of course, we have full-time jobs, so we have to be back in New York to work as well. And so on our day off, by that point, Alfred had to take the red eye back to be in New York. But Donna and I ended up going to open houses in Beverly Hills. And that was really fun. I loved looking at houses and apartments there. They're very different than our experience here in New York.
But I would think they would be.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't they the different? This is just my perception. So let's have a chat about, you know, real estate perception here. My perception of California, because I was born and raised there, is that houses tend to be pretty big, pretty expansive, and, you know, the houses that you're talking about, lots of room. And New York mm-hmm. is tight. And, again, yes. This is my perception. Everything, you're all kind of on top of each other. So am I right or wrong?
Yes, we are on top of each other.
Well, you know, oftentimes, Denise, when someone is moving mm-hmm. to Manhattan from, let's say, the suburban market, they're being shown apartments in their price range. The first question that they will ask is, or state, where am I going to put my dining room table?
And my car.
Forget the car. Where am I going to put my dining room table? Because they don't want to give up that table for some reason. I guess it has lots of memories. And these are usually empty nesters, like baby boomers or empty nesters who want to now return to the city. And it's a little bit of sticker shock. So they have to learn to change one of the variables. Either they have to change the location to get more space, or they have to up the price that they're willing to spend, or they may have to sell that dining room table or leave it in the
right.
house that they're selling.
Right.
We recently had a customer who transferred into the city from the suburbs, and they had a very large home there. I did find them, I think the apartment was about 3,000 square feet. It was in a new condominium, and they happened to have had parking spaces, but you had to purchase them. And, of course, they had an SUV, so they had to purchase the largest space available, and that was $300,000, just the parking
what?
Space.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I think I just had a heart flutter, not in a good
oh,
way.
No. And in other buildings, it's up half a million. It could be even up close to $1 million for a parking space. The privilege to have your car in your building.
Now, if you don't wish to purchase your parking space, you can rent. You can just park your car in a garage, and that standard is about $600 a month for the car to sit in a cold garage.
Mm-hmm. And
oh,
we all
be horrible.
We all have our cars in our garages. All three of us. Between the three of us, we could have a mortgage on another house.
And don't forget to tip the valet in, on the way in and on the way out.
You know, I'm going to stay in the South. I mean, I love looking at all these different things that y'all do. I'm going to stay right here. I've got this gorgeous yard. My car is in the garage. Half of my garage is gym. Half of my car houses my Range Rover. I'm going to stay put. I'll stay right here.
That sounds good.
Well, you know,
I'd love to come visit, though.
You should. We'll take you to see some nice properties.
What we try to convey to people is that when you move into Manhattan, you don't live in your apartment. You live in Manhattan. So everything is part of your home or an extension of your home. You don't have a backyard? Well, Central Park, it's like 200 acres. That's your backyard. You know.
Right,
So there's lots of benefits. You don't have to shovel snow.
Somebody else does it. You don't even take the garbage out.
You hire
out
people for that.
Everything gets delivered.
So there certainly are some perks that come along with overspending on a shoebox.
You know, Manhattan's a big thing. You should think of Manhattan as assisted living.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, that's everything is right there. You have your doorman. You have your valet. Right. You have everything. You even have dog walkers.
We do. And for a mere $200 a week.
And then there's doggy daycare, so you can drop your pooch off like you drop a kid off.
We have that
too. Yeah. Confused.
Listen, when my dog goes to the groomer, because you know I'm an introvert. I think I shared that with you during our pre-call. And I'm a high-functioning, highly committed introvert. So I have created a lifestyle where I really don't have to go out of my house unless I just want to, which means that my poor dog gets to bark at other dogs in the street, but she doesn't really get to play with them. So when I take her to the groomers, we both go to our groomers on the same day each month. We have a day out. And honestly, I open that door, and they've got a half door between their lobby, their waiting room, and the groomer section, you know, one of those little half barn doors.
Yes.
Look, I drop that leash, and she just leaps over the door. She doesn't say goodbye. You know, talk to you later, Mom. She's just gone. Hurts my feelings every time. It's like, come on back here.
That too. One of my brother-in-laws took his child to daycare for the first time, and he was so afraid that this little 2.5-year-old was not going to want to go in without him, and he was prepared to stay. The moment they walked in the door, the kid took off, went to play with the other kids, and never looked back.
Right.
The New York City kids are
I know.
Very sophisticated.
It sounds like it. And, you know, New York to me, not Hollywood so much. I just, that whole lifestyle doesn't really interest me. But New York has always been fascinating to me. The architecture, I mean, your brownstones. Oh, my gosh, I will look at pictures of those things all day long. Do I want to live that compacted mother of God? No. I mean, just the thought of it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
You think of brownstones as compacted.
No. I wandered off on a tangent. Yeah, I love the look of brownstones. I lost my mind there a minute while I was thinking, oh, God, people. But, you know, I mean, I look at the architecture of your buildings, and look, I can get lost just on Pinterest and, you know, New York skyline, and just, oh, my gosh, it's so beautiful. And then I see all the people wandering around, and I'm gone. I'm out. I have to go back home.
But
the city is beautiful.
It is. And, you know, with LED lighting now, when we come in from the weekend out in on Long Island and we're driving back in and all the lights are lit on all the iconic buildings like the Chrysler Building and Empire State Building, et cetera, it is so beautiful. It looks like a fairy tale city now. It is really
beautiful. Oh, I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some now, parts listen, that are not so beautiful.
Well, that's anywhere you go. I mean, I live in what could really be termed a village, and parts of it are fabulous, and parts of it you just avoid. I mean, you're going to have that anywhere. Okay,
that's
so
true.
You guys, I mean, you're sharing some of these wonderful stories, but what prompted you? Because, I mean, just listening to how busy you are, I'm kind of breathless. So I'm wondering, because I'm trying to write a book, so I'm wondering how in the world y'all found time to write a book with the schedules that you maintain.
We do have a very hectic schedule. So we have full-time jobs. We have homes that we all have been in the middle of building, renovating, and decorating. We had a home that we recently purchased to rent as a vacation rental, which we had to renovate and decorate. And I'm just at the tail end of building my home with my boyfriend, who happens to be a builder, so that's handy. And so all of that takes a lot of time. What we found the best way to write was a few minutes at a time. Sometimes it was just 20 minutes or half an hour at a time, getting up early in the morning, not watching television in the evening. It was a lot of work. The hardest part was the copy editing. Once you're at the point that the publisher our publisher had three copy editors on our book, and it was a very intense 3 months of copy editing. And then promoting the book, that in itself is a full-time job for most authors. We can't just take off anytime we want, but we're doing as many appearances as we can. Radio is easy for us. We love this because here we are sitting in our conference room, so we didn't have to fly somewhere. But if we're invited to and it's compelling enough, we will. And it's really been fantastic. People are... What's so fascinating is, while the book is about real estate, the part that everybody is most interested in is the family aspect and the fun that we have and all the things that we do together. And that and so many people feel like they're a part of our family once they've read the book. They feel like they know us. We've been approached by people we don't even know to say, oh, my goodness, I love your book. I feel like I'm a member of your family. And so the hard work is rewarding when you get to meet such amazing people. We have met the most extraordinary people on this tour, and it's so much fun. And people that will be friends with us, that we'll be friends with, and we're happy to be in their lives for the rest of our lives.
Denise, each of these projects that we're involved in are not compartmentalized. And each project tends to be an overlap of another project or an extension. And it's a lot easier for us to manage all of this because it's a very simple handoff to move from perhaps talking with you right now in the book and talking about real estate to walking into my office and then helping some agent with a $2 million transaction to picking up a call from the designer I'm working with because the bathroom is being built and something didn't come in on time. Heading out to the Hamptons tonight, checking on the investment property. It all sort of flows together. Sure, there is a limited amount of time in each day, but I think because it's all related and because each of us get along with each other, and also we're very passionate about what we do, and it comes easy to us, and it's an addiction. I think if you put that all together, it sort of is all encapsulated.
Yeah, so we're not having to change direction so much, like Alfred was saying. We're flowing with all the aspects of our life, which is wonderful. And then with James, my life partner, his life is in parallel to mine because of his business, being a builder. In fact, he's working right now on a property that I sold, and he's doing the renovation of that property. And so it's seamless, and it makes life very exciting for all of us.
And see, I completely understand that. I mean, I'm totally on board with that, because I can see that all of you have the same passions. You're in step with one another. You're sharing. So my next question, when's the TV show? You know it's got to happen, right?
I'm not sure where they'll squeeze it. They'll just have to follow us. We don't have time to stay still.
Well, that's going to be interesting, because one of my agents is just signed a contract with a TV show, and they're also looking at me to participate in the show. So we'll see where that goes.
I plucked that out of thin air. We've never talked about this before. So. But it just seems to me it's a natural progression, right?
We'll see. We had been approached once before, and at the time we weren't that enthusiastic about it. I can't say that now that we may consider it. I think it's become much more common. So for brokers to be on TV shows is actually very advantageous to our business. So I think now we would be more enthusiastic about it.
We have a number within our company, Douglas Elliman. We have a number of agents that are on TV shows. And the biggest show is called Million Dollar Listing with Frederick. And I can tell you that for each one of the agents that is on that show, whether it's the show in New York or in Los Angeles, it has catapulted their professions. It has completely catapulted the amount of business that they do. It's unbelievable how many homeowners or buyers want to work with a quote-unquote celebrity agent.
That's not surprising. I mean, I haven't had cable for years, but I did watch one or two episodes of the show that you just referenced. And I was fascinated. I was fascinated with all of the things that go on during this process of showing, you know, moving people around from here to there. It was interesting. But like I said, I don't watch much TV, and I finally just got tired of paying for cable that was just sitting there. So I haven't had it for years, but I completely understand what you're talking about. So one of the things that I really wanted to ask y'all, because I think Joanne had shared this with me in an earlier call, that you guys have some crazy, crazy stories, funny stories, you know, real estate stories, real estate questions, and just kind of episodes that really kind of inspired the book. Can you share some of those?
Well, that's how we started. Alfred and I were out to dinner, and we were talking about a very funny situation with two of Alfred's brokers, and they were attempting to sell a property, which became a very a difficult situation with a buyer who thought that she was controlling the deal, but there were multiple bids on the property. And we were laughing so much about it, we went back to my apartment and started to write it down. And when a week later, we decided to get together again, we read the story, what we had written out loud. We're like, wow, this is funny, isn't it? And so
we thought it was funny
anyway. And we were working with someone who knew the publisher that we're now with, and when he heard that we had this idea of writing a book about real estate, he asked to meet with us. And it was based on the title of the book that we signed a contract with his company. And so then, of course, we had to actually sit down and write it. And then it's so easy to start to remember all of the funny stories. I mean, Alfred has a very funny story. I think Alfred with Barbara Corcoran when you were doing the new website. Alfred has a story that's in the book about, you know, he was doing the
I was working for Barbara. This is actually going back in the 90s when Barbara, she was a very forward-thinking business leader. and
before Shark Tank, right?
Oh, this is before Shark Tank. This is when she was still running the Corcoran Group, which is our competitor right now.
Good thing, y'all friends.
Oh, you know, never burn a bridge.
Right. Right.
Because you never know when you have to cross back over. So I was working for her. This is really going back to the early 90s, and managing a small sales office, and she asked me to breakfast, and I figured, well, that's got to be a good thing because no one gets fired at breakfast. And she said, I want you to take us into the 21st century, which meant the internet and computers and all things like that. So I worked on a huge project of bringing in the professionals to rewire and computers. But one of the things that I enjoyed working on the most was developing a website. And she said, we need this website to build business, and I'm going to give you one directive, and that is not to put me on the cover of this website. So design after design after design after design, she turned down everything. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to put her on the cover of this magazine, of this this website.
I knew that was coming.
You know, very much like in the fashion of
it.
Like a Vogue magazine or something. So we were working with photographs, unbeknownst to Barbara, working with photographs, and I'm saying, this is just not working too well. So I had just seen a documentary on how photos are altered. So I had someone alter the photo of Barbara's legs, and I gave her another 6 inches on her legs and carved her ankles a little bit. So I walked into her office with a poster showing Barbara on the cover, and she looks at it, and she said, I love it. I absolutely love this. I have to have it. This is what we're doing.
I look fabulous.
So I said, great, okay, Barbara. And I turned to, I started laughing, I was walking out of the office laughing, and she calls me back. She said, why are you laughing so much? I said, I'm sorry, but I have to tell you the truth. I said, those are not your legs. And she said, well, no wonder why I look so good. But we did go forward with those legs.
Right.
Yeah, so that was
hysterical.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So we had a lot of fun moments like that with Barbara.
You know, one of the other anomalies of purchasing in Manhattan is that we have cooperative buildings that are you don't own your apartment, you own shares of stock in a corporation. And then they have what you call a co-op board, and all the buyers have to have an application, and the applications have to be reproduced for all of the board members. You might have 12 copies of a 3 or 4 inch application, and they're very intrusive. They include all of your financials, all of your bank statements, your IRAs, anywhere you have money, real estate. If you have artwork, you have to have the appraisals, and you have to have reference letters. And this is very arduous. It's easier to get into graduate school. And so we're always helping people with all of that. And so I had a situation where I was asked to represent the sale of a fairly large apartment. It was the largest in the building, and it was basically an estate sale and in what we call estate condition. But before I could represent the party that was handling the estate, which was a bank, both the banker and I had to be interviewed by the co-op's president in order to even be able to have this listing. So we get to this woman's apartment. She has hair about 2 feet high. She looked like she should be on the cover of Money of some obscure island. She was on
That's
a divan.
Texas hair, by the way. That's
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's big.
Hair.
It was big hair.
Yeah.
But she was in her 70s, and the hair was pure white, and she had her legs up on her divan, and we sat on two little stools in front of her. And so she said yes after we had our interview. And then we had to discuss all of the buyers, potential buyers for this apartment. So we had negotiated with a gentleman who actually had been in the entertainment business, and he was nickel and diming us, going back and forth. Finally, the contract got issued, took 3 weeks to get that negotiated, and the attorney called me up and said, we need for you to sign, and he was a well-known person, we need for you to sign a non-disclosure agreement that nobody will find out he lives in this building. I said, I can't do that. So then, long story short, we continued to show the property. We get another offer from a young family whose The wife's mother was the president of a very prestigious club in the city called the Colony Club. And so when this other man found out, he increased his offer by $1 million. So in our conversation with the president of the board, we had to review these two potential buyers, and they said, we want the young couple. And so this bank had to actually sell the apartment for $1 million less, because that would be someone who would pass the board. And that's perhaps an unusual situation, but that's part of what we face when 70% of our housing stock of apartments, whether they be co-ops or condos, happen to be co-ops. It's a very interesting phenomena. Our deals are not done until 3 months after the contract is signed.
You know, to give you some perspective on the housing stock, 75% of the buildings in Manhattan are rental buildings, and the other 25% are a combination of co-ops and condominium buildings. And then within that ownership, co-op and condo buildings, 70% are co-ops and 30% are condominiums. So in these co-ops, when co-ops first were established, and you can go back to the turn of the century, they were established as private clubs. These were not investment properties. Right. This was not meant to buy and make money. It was to control who your neighbor was in your building. And, of course, people wanted like-kind in the building. So, and most of these co-ops were on the prominent boulevards, like Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue, Central Park West. And these are large homes in Manhattan, 15 rooms and 12 rooms and 18-room properties and duplexes and terraces. What happened was back in the 80s, actually the early 80s, condominiums started being constructed. And you didn't have to pass a board or be approved by the committee to get into these condominiums. And that sort of turned people's heads a bit to start looking at real estate as being more of an investment and not just a club. So the prices and values of co-ops started to climb as well. And when condominiums became easier to buy, co-ops had to start loosening up their policies. They're still pretty strict right now. You know, you still have to go through this complete board process, and you have to share more with the board than you share with your spouse. But,
ouch.
You know, it's subject to approval. And if they turn you down, they do not have to give a reason as to why they have turned you down. And it's devastating.
I would think, especially after you go through all this, you've got your heart set on that particular home or piece of property. I guess my big question here is, and you probably get asked this quite a bit, but, you know, what about all the different rules and regulations that, you know, neighborhood, I guess down here we call it neighborhood busting, you know, where you may go into a predominantly white neighborhood and, you know, somebody else wants to move in. We don't care. Honestly, we don't care. I mean, we kind of live and let live down here, but I've read horrible stories about what people have had to go through to find a house in a market that they love because they were of the wrong ethnicity. Or, yeah. So does that do these boards have trouble with that?
Well,
I would think that they would.
As real estate brokers, we go through an annual training of fair housing, and that is to
I was trying to get to. I didn't know what the term was.
Yeah. It's a several-hour class. It's every year. You must take it. It's mandatory, and it goes through the processes of fair housing and how not to discriminate. You know, there's always constant changes, and just to give you a simple idea, we're not allowed to write an ad that says walking distance to the park, as simple as that, because that's
why?
Because the word walking is discriminatory.
Oh, it tells you where the house is.
People that can't walk. So you can say the property is two blocks from the park.
Say that again? I interrupted you. Say that again? I think my eyebrows just hit my hairline.
So
I'll never need a facelift, by the way.
You know, we take fair housing classes every year because there's constantly changes are being made. So just to give you a very simple idea about fair housing, when we write an ad, and the Central Park is two blocks from the apartment, We don't say walking distance to the park. We're not allowed to use the word walking because that will or can offend someone that cannot walk. So we say two blocks from the park.
That's the part that had my eyebrows in. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's just ridiculous.
But this, oh, we will be brought up on fines and charges if we do things like that. We can't say family apartment. Let's say an apartment has three bedrooms or four bedrooms. We can't say family apartment.
We can't say family room.
Yeah, we can't use the word family.
In case somebody doesn't.
Why?
Because
not everyone has a family. Yeah, this is real. And when we're asked by a potential buyer, will they allow, you know, and once you start going into any sort of a minority situation, whether it's someone of color or sexual orientation, your buyers are concerned. Like, is this the type of building that will accept who we are? We can't answer that question because we don't know, and the only advice we give them is to spend some time in the lobby or outside the building and see if who's comes and goes, if that's pleasing to you or not. But no, our job is to only qualify based on their financial qualifications in the building. That's it. We don't bring up anything else. We don't have to discuss anything else.
School.
So basically the buyer has to do their own due diligence, that's not a bad thing.
When it comes to, you know, whether they think they might be comfortable in the building or not, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
They
right.
also have to do that regarding the schools. We can't even discuss school districts because that's considered a term in real estate as redlining. And that can be considered discriminatory.
My goodness.
So do have to be quite careful.
You know, there are a lot of people in the world who have their panties in the wad all the time. I avoid those people.
That's true.
I avoid them. Sorry. I'm just thinking, this is ridiculous. It would just get along, which I understand is, you know, we don't all get along, but come on. Okay, so architecture. I know this is a huge passion with you. Oh, and I wanted to go back a step because you said something, I think, Joanne, it was you, estate condition. What does that mean? That caught my ear there.
Yeah, so at estate sales, when somebody has passed away, often they are elderly and the apartment has not been updated in many years. And so
okay.
we'll go into some of these situations where it looks like a disaster zone. I mean, it's extraordinary.
Cat hair.
That
yeah.
Man,
gotcha.
Live that way.
Did you say cat hair?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Is that
cat
another
hair.
Story?
You know, some we have gone into homes where they were hoarders. So you're walking through, you know, little narrow aisles that piled up with, you know, paper alongside you and books and newspapers from who knows when. A lot of people here don't read newspapers anymore. They just go online. But, you know, a lot of old furniture. Sometimes there's a lot of very valuable things. So you have to bring in auction houses to get everything valued. It is an extraordinary thing. And then we have teams of subcontractors, so to speak, who may go in and do the cleanup, maybe paint. Maybe we bring in someone to stage the apartment just so that it shows well and looks good in photographs. So it could take a couple of months before something, even longer, before an apartment that's now part of an estate is ready to go on the market for sale.
You know, we're finding now that the consumer has less and less interest in purchasing a property which needs to be renovated. People would rather buy something that they can just move into. And the properties that are sitting on the market longer are these properties that need a lot of work. And it's not so easy to do work in Manhattan. Some of the more prominent buildings, like on Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue, they have something called summer rules or renovation rules. And if you purchase a property that needs to be renovated, you have to get in line to renovate your home, and it can only be renovated during summer months when the majority of the people are out at their, you know, summer estates. And they don't want multiple renovations happening in the building. And if you go beyond a certain length of time, there are fines, daily fines. So it's not easy. And all of these new condominiums that are in fashion now are a lot more desirable and attractive to people to just move into and not deal with the work. It's not easy, especially these older buildings. They don't have the wiring to handle proper air conditioning and the electrical needs that people have today. So you have to, you know, everything has to be approved. But just to give you an example, you have to bring wiring up from the basement of the building. And what is that at a cost of $10,000 a floor?
Per floor.
So if you live on the 18th floor, you're spending $180,000 to run a wire to your floor. So you have proper power to run your hair dryers, your clothes dryer, and your air conditioner.
Right. And your double refrigerators and freezers, you know, all the high-end appliances that everybody must have. But those risers...
We have to have air conditioning.
Yeah,
I don't care if I have a sink. I have to have air.
Yeah. You know, in New York, we have what we call pre-war buildings. That's anything built before World War II.
I was going to ask you about that. You know, don't you have to then deal with the historical society and colors those things?
Yeah, but most of the time that's the exterior of the building. So as a homeowner, that may not affect you unless you're changing windows, then yes. You have to go make sure that the landmarks approves everything that you do. But what you have to do to get electric up to an 18th floor is drill through concrete of every floor. Then they have to run through this. When they do this in the back stairwells usually, and then they have pipes that have to go through, and that's why the cost is so high. And sometimes they even have to go out to the street and have our local electric company, which is Con Ed, open up the street and you know, bring pipes in from the main lines into the building. It's quite a process. So
I can imagine. What about asbestos? I mean, some of these older buildings are loaded with it.
So I was mentioning to you that James was doing a project on an apartment that I sold. It happens to be in Trump Tower, and that building, the floors have asbestos underneath them. So for a room that's 1,000 square feet, the cost to remove the asbestos is $27,000. It's just remarkable. And you can imagine what it's like getting in and out of that building with a Secret Service. That's a job. All of his crews had to be screened. They all have to – I mean, you have to go through a number of steps. They have the bomb-sniffing dogs. Mm-hmm. All the trucks have to go through that. The street is closed off, but then they do let you on the street once you pass muster.
Wow. And the reason I ask about the asbestos, my brother worked around asbestos. He was an industrial electrician. And he had to have a double lung transplant 5 years ago because of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's always, you know, when I think of old buildings, and I could admire them and think, oh, my gosh, they're gorgeous. But now I instantly go to, but what's in them? So.
Right. Well, now those are the buildings from the 80s, but then when you go back to the buildings from the 20s, what we refer to as pre-war, they did not have central air conditioning. So putting central air conditioning into your apartment and the building, the co-op board, has to approve that you have a compressor somewhere on a roof. Some of them may not even allow that, so you have to go into different types of systems. It's what they call split systems. But anyway, it's very expensive. That alone could be $100,000 just to put in your central air, depending on the size of the apartment.
So, there's a lot to contend with, but fortunately, there are many professionals in Manhattan that do this and are able to navigate the processes and negotiate with the right people. So if someone wants to come in and buy an apartment that needs to be renovated, it can get done. And it does get done.
And it's amazing. It gets done. Yes.
And usually it's someone who wants to create their own space that is attracted to these older properties that need work. They'd rather not pay for someone else's work.
Right.
So, and that's fine, but they don't sell at a premium, obviously, because it could take a year to 2 years to finish a property before you can move into it.
Yeah, especially in larger
space.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to somebody who has never really lived in Manhattan? They're coming from maybe a state close to you. They're coming from Texas. They could be coming from anywhere. What advice do you give them when they, number one, start on their search, and number two, how do you kind of, you know, find out what type of building that they're looking for or what kind of space they're looking for? And then as soon as we get that answered, I've got to go to the Hamptons. I love looking at the Hamptons, so let's move over there in a bit.
I just had a family do just that, and actually I met them in Beverly Hills when we had our book event. They came in and they said, we need to buy an apartment in Manhattan, and how do we go about doing that? We know nothing about it. So the first thing I said to them was, you can go on Elliman.com or StreetEasy.com, just start looking in Manhattan, and plan to come and be in the city for a week or eight. They end up coming for 8 days. And I said, we'll go out every day. I will show you a different neighborhood every day. And then the last 2 or 3 days, we'll go back to the apartments that you're most interested in. They ended up, they were at one price range, but that price range increased by $2 million by the time they found what they loved. But it was, they loved the process, and I loved it too. So the first 3 days we were out. By the fourth or fifth day, I introduced them to an architect, a very talented architect that has worked with some of my other clients, and he was able to point things out that we hadn't seen, and we'd have lunch together, we had dinner together. It was a wonderful 8 days. We'll be friends forever. And by the end of the 8 days, they were very confident in the apartment that they chose. Fortunately, it's a condominium, so we don't have to worry about board approval.
so they can get in quicker then.
And they hired the architect. He's also a designer. They hired the architect to renovate the they don't have to renovate it, but they're doing some built-ins and things of that nature. People always want to do something to the apartment, even when it's brand new. They'll have an architect and designer come in and make some adjustments for them.
Before people arrive in Manhattan, they usually have some idea where they think they want to live, and they seem to be attracted to various neighborhoods, either the West Village or Chelsea or Tribeca. So downtown is probably where the majority of sales take place. It's about 40% of the market is downtown. It's the most vibrant part of Manhattan. But once they get here and they don't seem to be finding exactly what they want, then a good broker is going to take that potential buyer and show them different neighborhoods and see how that their price point varies from neighborhood to neighborhood, because the prices do vary tremendously. You know, your budget may get you a one bedroom in one neighborhood, but perhaps a two bedroom in another neighborhood, or you know where you are in the building. If you're in a very tall building and you have an open view, that can sometimes increase the price by 50%. But if you're on a lower floor, it can almost be half the price that property, because you don't have that view of Central Park or over the river. So you need a good broker who has knowledge of Manhattan and properties and price points and layouts to guide you, really, because otherwise it's completely an overwhelming process for someone who's unfamiliar with the island.
One of the things that buyers from out of town really have to get over the space. If they're moving, in this case, the buyers were not moving but buying another home. It was a third home for them. But for other buyers who may be transferred to the city, they're selling a $5,000 or $6,000 house that
square foot.
Square foot home. And then coming here, and their furniture is not going to fit in a 2,000 square foot home, and that's a shock. That is really a shock for them.
So let's jump to the Hamptons.
Yes, let's do. Before we do that, I've got to tell you, when I bought my home here.
To work today.
Yes, y'all are.
Okay. I hate you guys. I hate all y'all.
Well, you can come here. You move here, and we'll take you with us.
We get a card and we put on ways to try to figure out the fastest route out of Manhattan, which is sometimes going up into the Bronx and taking three bridges.
Oh, gosh.
But we're usually out there in about 2.5 hours on a Friday evening, off season.
Sounds lovely. It really does sound lovely. I have to tell you that when I bought my house, and I bought my house right after Hurricane Katrina, and I bought it online because we had been house hunting for a while. Couldn't find what I wanted, but my broker knew exactly what I wanted. And I was 80 miles away, and I got this call, so you've got to come look at this house. And I couldn't, so I sent my now former husband. He couldn't even talk. He's like, oh, I love this house. I love this house. And I said, put her on the phone, because I trusted her taste, sadly, more than I trusted his. And she said, this is the house you want. So, you know, I had him go sign everything. I didn't get to see the house. But the reason we bought it that day, we bought it the day it listed, was because after Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, people were coming from New Orleans and buying everything they could for, you know, companies, oil companies were buying everything for their people, for their, you know, their owners. It was a mess. So I didn't see the house until I'd gone by the real estate office, signed the agreement, worked over my check, and I saw the house about 9:30 at night. Fortunately, I love it. But you just don't know. You just don't know. So,
but you had a feel, an instinctual feel.
Yeah, I did. And it had lots of windows. So, you know, I need windows desperately. But I showed the, you know, pictures of the real estate listing to my sister in California. And she said, I could sell my house and buy three of those. I said, I know. So that was my story. but I would have shock. Because I have a lot of room and I'm spread out in this house and I've got this gorgeous yard. I think you probably meet people like me who are like, where's the rest of it? And what's going on here?
We do. So, by the way, the town, the village of Southampton dates back to, is it 1642? So it's extremely charming, and you're a short walk to the ocean, and we have sandy white beaches there. So we have a great combination of new and old. And so when you're in the village, it feels like a throwback, you know, to, you know, the old days of the summer communities that we had grown up with. And, of course, as you know, our parents then gave that up.
It's very Norman Rockwell-like.
It is. It's very lovely.
Yeah.
Really lovely.
That's the way I view it.
Except the houses on the ocean sell for about $75 million.
And I wanted to ask you about that because the New York market, I would think, with my very limited knowledge of the two areas, would be very, very different. You know, I don't think that you have a lot of co-ops and the, you know, problems that you're dealing with in New York City and in Manhattan. And you have a lot more room on the island, don't you? I mean, you can spread out because the pictures that I see, and I do go lurk. I lurk around in the Hamptons. I think it's gorgeous. And it looks to me like you're pretty spread out there. You can have big yards and big estates and, you know, big sprawling mansions where you can't necessarily do that in Manhattan. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say our homes out there are larger than our apartments for sure. I mean, my house is small in comparison to most of the Southampton homes that are in what you call the estate section. I think my total square footage, including the pool house, may be 3,200 square feet. I know in other parts of the country that might be considered spacious. Alfred's house is considerably larger, so is his property. And
I get to live there all by myself.
He doesn't have to share it.
I'm with you.
Like,
it's mine.
Like
it's all
you,
mine. Nobody come knock on the door.
Like you, Denise, I have the need for lots of windows, high ceilings, openness, and light, yet privacy.
Yeah. Oh, and hedges.
Me too. And trees.
Are very important. Hedges are the most important
green. Oh, I can imagine.
In the Hamptons.
I can imagine.
But it's pretty, the location really dictates the cost, the price. And, you know, there's a dividing line. It's called South of the Highway, and south of the highway is the ocean side. And things are considerably higher in price than they are north of the highway. However, if you want land and you want acreage, you need to go north of the highway. Otherwise, if you want acreage south of the highway, there's an area in the estate section where it can go up to 5 acres of land. But, you know, you're talking about, and this is not on the ocean, but you're talking about easily $30, $40 million houses. So, and I'm fascinated because down one street there's a cornfield, and the land is probably worth $25 million where this corn grows. I don't know where the corn goes.
It's protected land. We do have green land.
Is it seriously? It's protected land?
Yes.
Yeah. Agricultural fields.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that makes, because where I live, you know, we were surrounded, it was the site of my home and my little three street wide neighborhood, which is now grown, we've had houses pop up around us, was the site of an old plantation, and it was all sugarcane field when I bought it. I was very happy with that. Then they started tearing down the oak trees in the fields, and I had to put up fences. And I hate fences. I've never had a fence before. I've always lived on a lake or, you know, in the country. So what I did, when you mentioned hedges, I went, I planted Confederate jasmine on all of my fences. And now you don't see fence. All you see is this gorgeous wall of green and white flowers. It's beautiful. And it smells good.
That well, that great. Denise, that's exactly what we do. Everyone has fences because you have a pool and you have to have a fence by law.
Right.
But you don't want to see the fence, so the fences are buried within all
they're
of the
ugly.
Hedges.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are
exactly.
Not attractive. You know, you have to go on to Google Map and do an aerial view of like Southampton Village or any of the Hamptons, and it's amazing. You see how close the houses are, and everyone has a swimming pool. It's like a little bit like Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense. But what's nice is that, you know, we can park the car and then walk into town, walk to the movie theater, walk to get groceries, or walk down to the beach. And you don't want to run around in a car. That's not as relaxing.
No.
I can imagine. You know, we also have something that's called a green tax. And every time someone purchases a house, they have to pay a green tax. That tax money goes towards buying farmland to preserve that land so it doesn't become overdeveloped.
Well, wasn't that the original point of Central Park?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I know my history. Woo-hoo.
Olmsted was the man who designed the city streets, some of the parkways, and the park. He was he had great foresight to protect that area. It was just farmland up there that at the time that he designated that area.
Yeah, and that's a great public park in Manhattan.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those places I go lurk. By the way, we lost our audience in the chat room, but we are still recording, so you know, we're still good. Listen, do you have any last-minute kind of tips or advice that you can give people who are wanting to look at real estate, other than call you? Obviously, they need to call you, but any kind of sage advice that you can give our audience?
I would say, as Joanne suggested before, go online and get a sense of price points with properties, but you really need to find the right broker who can give you perspective on the market and perspective on value. Everyone thinks in terms of trying to save some money, but when you're making a purchase, which is usually this is the largest purchase in your life, you want to be sure that you are getting the right advice and guidance and negotiating skills from a professional.
I would also advise finding someone who can refer a broker to you, because there are thousands of brokers and not all of them have the experience that you would need, especially as a new buyer in an area. You want to have somebody who does have that expertise.
No kidding. Okay, so where can people find you on the web and where can they find your book?
Our book is on Amazon.com, Negotiating New York. It is also on beyondword.com and barnesandnoble.com. And they can find us on element.com under our names, Joanne R. Douglas, Donna Renna, or Alfred Renna. And we're, of course, on Facebook and all of the social media platforms. They could find us there. They could find your webcast or podcast. We'll have that posted as well.
Right. Well, listen, it has been a pleasure speaking with all of you, Joanne and Alfred and Donna. I didn't know that you were going to be there. I'm glad to have met you. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you shared with our audience and the great stories. And I'm really getting a kick out of some of these stories. And I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just type in Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Think of me while you guys are in the Hamptons. I would really appreciate some good thoughts.
We'll coach you tonight.
This was a lot of fun, Denise. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Oh, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. So anytime you want to come back, you just let me know.
We will.
Absolutely. We'll be
back. Our next book.
There you go. Yeah. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Denise.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.